Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. We're back in the studio here with Dean Hyers and Pete Makalek. Hi, you guys.
Hello.
Hey, again.
Hey. Our second mentoring conversation. Pete and Dean are consultants and skill builders who specialize in helping business professionals move forward, build business, and work more effectively and productively with each other. And they are great role models for implementing the skills that they are teaching others. Mm-hmm. They're doing themselves. In 2001, Dean and Pete co-founded Sage Presence around their backgrounds in film, from which they cultivated a unique expertise in storytelling and facilitating performances that truly speak to their audiences. Throughout its history, Sage Presence has helped thousands of clients generate confident and influential stage presence to tell powerful stories everywhere, from the networking floor to the presenter's stage. Ultimately, this has led to professional advancement and client organizations winning over $4 billion in new business. If you're interested in prior conversations, you can just go to the search engine or the search part of the WeMentor.com website, not the search engine, but the WeMentor.com website, and you can just type in Dean Hyers and Pete Makalek, and you can get all their podcast previous interviews. All right. So in our first interview with both of you together, we had a nice conversation about kind of catching up from where you were at when I spoke with you individually.
Right.
And also expressing kind of how you've grown through the process of transitions of being in partnership together since 2001, 16 years.
Yep. We talked a little bit about the beginning and a little bit about the middle and a little bit about where we are now.
Yeah. And I think it'd be wonderful for us, as we discussed before we were starting here, to talk about the point of view of what you've learned from people and also kind of how to develop and build some of the business relationships, tips from other people and positioning different relationships. And it's challenging as business owners and many business owners go through great anxiety about how to connect with people. And I think in a highly technical world, people aren't picking up the phone.
Yeah.
And they're not getting in front of people the ways in which they did in the past.
Right, to their own detriment.
Yeah.
If there was just one thing that I would encourage any entrepreneur or anybody who's considering going down the entrepreneurial path, is recognize that you stand out by not doing what everybody else is doing. You stand out by doing what fewer people are doing. And it's crazy, what fewer people are doing is the face-to-face stuff. You know, everybody is kind of succumbing to a certain amount of inertia, of staying put in front of their computer and thinking, yeah, well, I can connect to so many people through LinkedIn and Facebook and all the social media and stuff. And I think that's a great way to kind of blend in with, you know, the wallpaper that everybody's surrounded with. A great way to show up is to actually show up places, you know, go physically to where your clients are and get in their faces and talk to them. It's a great way to actually get them to think about you.
James Eder, he owns Causer Co. and he's in London, England, and it's a social app where you can download it and you can find out if other people in your proximity, like around up to 300 people, you can connect with them through the app and it's like a little screening tool. Mm-hmm. And you can actually start up conversations that way.
Hmm.
And so there's some parameters around that, but the context and I thought that is a way that's kind of the new way that people are connecting, is trying to get a little bit of information. But like so many times, because we're traveling more, we get stuck in places, like the with extreme weather too. Like if you're flying somewhere and you've got a delay in your flight, you know, how there's so many people around you in the same boat. You know, how do you drum up a conversation in a way that makes sense?
Well, Dean, Dean and I have both had really cool experiences along these lines. Dean, I want to let Dean answer this really thoroughly, but let me just throw this out. As an introvert, I had to totally learn it, and I learned it sort of retroactively through our process. You know, since learning it, I've had just some amazing conversations, some really, really fun and enjoyable conversations with total strangers. I once got this just amazing compliment at the end of a flight. As the guy was leaving, he said, "You know, this was the most fun conversation I've ever had on a plane."
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, and
how did you approach that situation?
Well, you didn't approach it with an app. I mean, I hate to say, the thing is, we're now reliant on some piece of technology to give us permission to get to what we can just do without. And actually, we're even working on some app ideas. So I don't.
Well, this is the millennial generation.
Understood.
That they have, and also they've grown up.
Yeah.
With the message "stranger danger."
Right.
Right.
And,
right.
Yeah. So this idea that it has to be qualified the idea that you can
pre-qualify. Yeah, it seems unnatural almost.
The fact is, you can do that as a person, and we're actually also going to engage in some app ideas that we think will help make networking more important or more effective. But we don't need to pre-qualify everyone to get in a conversation. One of the things I found as one of the best connections in a conversation is, yes, we have something in common. We both have nothing in common together.
Yeah.
You don't
Let's
need...
Let's figure it out together.
And you can have the commonality be that we're mutually that far apart from each other.
Yeah. Another way to put it is... I have gotten really curious about other people, and you know, people are experts in themselves. So if you just get really interested in them and ask questions to get their story,
right?
They'll really appreciate you for caring, you know, for being remotely interested, and they'll always have something to say because they're the ones who lived their life, you know.
Yeah.
I've just gotten really curious about other people. So that's kind of the big.
You really have. I mean, I have. I don't walk around inherently that curious in people, but I've seen Pete become more and more curious. There's something else that I think can play into this whole idea of building relationship, making connections, going against your own urge to just pass on the human connection.
Yeah.
And what it is I think. In this technological generation, a lot of us are losing touch with our instincts. There's chemistry, and chemistry exists as you walk down and make eye contact with another person. And we don't need any app's permission to listen to ourselves and see where there's an inkling to reach out. And I was walking through a plane, similar to Pete's story. It was just, I think it was last week, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago. I've lost track, but very recently.
Yeah.
And I made eye contact with a woman as we were walking by. And I remember thinking, oh, wow, the chemistry of cool person chemistry was there.
Yeah.
And she looked up and instantly she said, oh, are you sitting next to me? It was her instinct because she saw the chemistry clicked. And this is walking through a busy people. Now, and I said, no, and I kept going. And I said, no, but I wish I was. Yeah. And then it turned out I ended up misreading my seat number, and I was next to her across the aisle. We talked for 3 hours. It was a three-hour flight. And the conversation was deep and powerful. So part of what I'm sensing is that we as human beings have access to chemistry. We can read people. We can click with people. We have to listen to those impulses that guide us towards people that could be a fit.
Yeah.
And we also want to counter them sometimes and go to people that aren't a fit and see if we can find something.
Yeah. And by the way, just for those folks out there who consider themselves introverted and who are responding to this like, oh my gosh, really, do I have to? Or thinking, well, I can't do this. I've never been able to do this.
Or I'm not good at sales is what I hear frequently.
Right. And both Dean and I were terrible at sales and terrible at networking, actually, when we started for different reasons, I think. But once we kind of understood what to do, okay, so there are two things stopping you at least. There's not knowing what to do, and then there's just the fear and the sense that you're not wired that way. You know, I'm just not that kind of personality. Right.
Yeah.
Once you know what to do, anybody can do it. There is no expiration date on being able to build the skills. You know, there is no age at which you can't start cultivating this. And Dean's totally right. Just people aren't in the habit of doing it, so they're not cultivating the sort of the database in their heads to be able to get a sense of, well, who should I talk to and who shouldn't I talk to?
And they think there's a right person to talk to and a wrong person to talk to. Talk to someone. Mm-hmm. Talk to somebody. Everyone knows there's value
out of talking to anybody.
And so I think people are held back by the idea that it has to be the right kind of person. And if the 6 degrees of separation or the 4 degrees of separation, as it might now be, whoever you talk to, they know someone.
Yeah.
And it's I've gotten a lot of freedom out of abandoning the idea that there's a kind of person I better meet. There's a right and a wrong. I'm going to meet the people who I run into.
Yeah. And explore where the conversation goes.
And the fits have been incredible. Okay, so here, I was in Florida doing a networking thing. I hadn't done my presentation yet, so I didn't have the speaker clout yet. I was just another Joe in the crowd. And I networked with somebody because they were right near me. And it was so interesting. I didn't say anything about this person or about myself, but it turns out they were a budding filmmaker. And they had, I mean, it's a construction
networking
conference.
Event.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this person had made a web series and had made a 5-episode web series and had just written a feature. And interestingly enough, well, I made an independent feature and sold it to Warner Brothers. Suddenly, there was this really deep connection. Later on the same conference, I do a presentation and someone comes up to me and says, you know, I just wrote a screenplay. You know, I want to talk to you. You have no idea where your fits are going to be with people. And then I never forget the fit that I mentioned before. What we have in common is we both have nothing in common. We share that.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much to you either learn something new or you find something in common, but you don't need anything but the openness to see what's out there.
Yeah, and I found that too.
And the chance to listen to your instinct, to let it pull you around a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I like the way you said that. Exactly. So when you're building relationships with people
mm-hmm.
and you have different stakeholders in business, and I notice along the journey when it comes to having finances at stake and trying to meet payroll and when there's strain in the cash flow, the relationships can change.
Oh, sure.
Because people aren't clear, or the focus then is getting the cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we've all been there where, you know, we've worked with people that we know we shouldn't have, but at the time, you know, we needed the cash. So, you know, we sold the product or the service, and then it always explodes in our face. So how do you recover from some of those, you know, relationship explosions with some either clients or key stakeholders, where you got to really try, you've got something there that you need to resolve because you need to keep working together?
Right. Well, that's the key thing. Yeah, you need to keep working together. And I'm going to throw something out, Dean. If you have another perspective on this, please feel free to throw it out. The way I see it is, it's crucial for both parties to feel like they do need to continue to have the relationship. You know, if one member is like, okay, you know what, I'm done. That does make it hard on the other
when
member.
When they close the door.
Right. But if both of them see, boy, we're in a really cruddy situation right now because of what just happened. And if each person is saying, yeah, I still want something out of this relationship, then you, as one of those two people, can kind of can lead the conversation unilaterally and say, hey, we are in this crappy place, and what we want is to be in this better place. Let's have a conversation to get through there.
Okay. You shouldn't say crap.
Okay.
Bridge
and
the gap.
And what Pete's doing in the way he structured that, if it were a story, you're building a we story. Mm-hmm. The way you get across the chasm of two different perspectives is polarization happens when it's me versus you, us versus them. The we story includes us all. We are at an impasse is better than you're wrong.
Yeah.
And so we try to create the story that puts us on the same side of the fence, and so that we can figure out where we want to be. So we worked with a group of people who weren't working well with their client, and long and short of it is the we story was we're stuck and we want to be unstuck.
Okay.
That was a pretty, and they agreed. So we got to agreement just by getting them to see that together we are stuck and we both want to be moving forward.
Yeah.
And the middle of the story of us being stuck and wanting to move forward was collaboration. We're stuck. We're going to work together. We're going to get moving again. Yep. And that changed the polarization into a unified movement forward.
Right. Yeah. We worked with another team. This was an executive team of a small software company. For hours, these folks were like at each other's throats, and we were working with them, trying to get them to kind of create a story together. And it was kind of cool that the beginning of the story that we got them to recognize was we don't agree.
And they agreed on that.
Yeah.
And that was a thing.
It was like, right, okay, right. One for yeah. agreement.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And
there was a huge lift of like the lead weights turned into balloons, and suddenly the room was agreeing. That is our problem. We don't agree. And it changed everything.
Yeah, just from acknowledging what's really going on.
Right, right, right. Right. Yeah, yeah. There is great, great power that comes with seeing, oh, we actually do share a situation right now, even though it's cruddy, you know, and the cruddy thing is we don't agree.
Yeah.
Recognizing that we are all there together puts you on common ground.
Yeah.
So your listeners should hear this beat. This is basic storytelling. And we use story as a way to build communication that moves groups forward. The story he was talking about, the beginnings are problematic. And you don't actually go to a story or read a story or listen to a story that doesn't go anywhere. And the problematic beginning that starts every story means that we've got a perfect place to put our problems. We put them in the beginning, and stories go to a better place, a happier place, a more resolved place. That's the destination we're going for. And what I need to do and what you need to do and you need to do and we need to do, that's the action that's going to get us there. So if you bring a story structure into these conversations, and this is as true for negotiation as it is for selling, who's in a place that's not as good as it could be, and where do they need to go that's better, and how are we going to get them there? That's in the order I just said it, that's beginning and middle, but those are the three parts. So spot those three parts when you're in a negotiation and talk about how you're going to get somebody to the better place.
Mm-hmm. That's such good advice, because there's so many times where you get stuck someplace in the story.
Right. Yeah, and
right, you get stuck like in the middle,
sure.
Or maybe I didn't name it, like I didn't even look at
right.
it like a beginning
and
of
when
a
you're
story.
Stuck in the
right.
middle,
I looked at it like you know, something I did caused this to go south.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. And it's usually is the middle. It's usually or arguing about who should do. Yeah. It's what you did that you shouldn't have, and it's what I don't want to do. It's what you better do. We're arguing about the action in the middle. And it's a lot easier to get to a better place on the middle if you can clarify where are we now that's not so good and where do we want to be. And it's beginning, middle, and end is also problem, solution, outcome.
Yeah.
And you'll notice that these questions of where are we now and where do we want to be, they kind of imply who we're talking about, which is us.
Yeah.
One of our central tenets is audiences won't care about the story if they don't care about the main character.
Yeah, right.
And you know what character they don't care about when we're arguing? They don't care if I'm arguing with you.
Yeah.
You're not the one that I care about. I care about me. So that's why it's got to be we. We have to get to a we.
We both have to be main characters.
Right. The main character is us. The main character can be a group.
I see.
So a main character is a person or a group of people. And so we can be a main character, us. The company can be a main character. So it's really impossible. If I'm mad at you, I am not interested in your story because your story is about you, and I don't care about that right now. But if you say we—
Because I'm so mad at you.
Yeah, well, we are always fighting, are we not?
Yeah, and we always are.
But if it's we, I can get behind that main character because I'm part of it.
Yeah.
And you are too. So it's the inescapable collaboration that comes from the we story. So you want to try to start communicating those. And, you know, I'm wondering in terms of the—
Because so often, just to build on that, the posturing, you know, each person postures and tries to, like, dig their heels in and be very clear on their own story of how they can be right or how they can win over the other person.
Right, which is basically, you are forcing the fight.
Yeah, it's a formula for disaster.
Yeah, it usually is. It's unless you're the one that's more powerful and can smash the other team, then it can work great for you. But you don't know what they have, and you're going to unleash whatever they have in that process because they're going to defend themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, and the good news about that is if you're in a fight with somebody and they're telling you their side of it, you can actually sort of unilaterally choose to be really interested in their perspective on it, you know, instead of kind of going with your instinct, which is to say, no, this isn't about you, this is about me.
Well, that's the triggering of the emotion. Like, you know, somebody's really invested in an outcome.
Right.
And so they can't hear because they're feeling the feeling is so big.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so the other way—
So disengaging that is a way to say, all right, let's talk about your perspective.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And what we want to do is you want to get all the frustration out first. If someone's really mad, you want to deal with the not-so-happy beginning. The beginning is where their pain is, and you want to meet them where they are and get them to vent it out because then they have a chance. If they've got it out of their system, they've got a better shot of listening to what the other options are. So if I'm not ready for your solution— And I don't believe in the better outcome until you deal with my pain.
Yeah, so that would be a forced short story, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. A very uninteresting story if you can't get beyond the first act.
Right, and you can't
get— Oh, it's an incomplete story.
Yeah, it's an incomplete story, and you can't get beyond the first act until you really meet them in their pain. And that's where emotional sensitivity comes in and emotional intelligence. If I can join you with some empathy and feel your pain with you, I can let you vent that out. And then you could be ready to hear and move on.
Yeah.
It's like releasing something in your brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Where it's caught in the emotional amygdala area.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I really like the way that Dean just worded it. It can inspire people to move on, but it doesn't necessarily just because it kind of depends on what's going on for the person. So you know how sometimes people just want to complain?
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Right. They're not looking for a solution.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Because might mean accountability.
Right.
Or them having to be responsible.
Yeah, or they don't know they're open to anything else because right now they just need to have their pain met. You have to meet them there first.
Right, right. But what I've found is if as a as sort of a somebody who always wants to problem solve, you know, I'm always looking for the complete story, but very often, you know, somebody who just wants to complain really isn't interested in the whole story.
That's a good point.
So I can kind of lose my patience with it, but what I've needed to do is just be okay with the incomplete story.
I just had a revelation.
And just
not be tied to the outcome.
Right. Yeah. So the habit that I've tried to get into is just, you know, hear it and understand it and kind of feed it back. Okay. Oh gosh, yeah, I totally understand what the complaint here. That's got to be really, really frustrating. This is my wife I'm talking about usually. and she's like, yeah, gosh, it's so frustrating. And then it's done, you know?
Yeah.
And she doesn't need to keep to going go on about it.
Hi, yeah. Jill. You know, because I just think I had a revelation here. One of the reasons that's frustrating is the person who's whining and complaining, it seems like they're not getting anywhere. I have a new explanation because there's a situation. I'm not going to go into what it is because it just wouldn't be appropriate here. But there are times you already know what the end has to be.
Yeah.
You know what has to be done. But as I said, you can't move forward till you've dealt with that pain.
Yeah.
I already know what I have to do.
Yeah.
Dang it. And I know I'm going to do it, and I know what the end is. The reality is I know the beginning, I know the end, and I know the action, but I'm not moving forward yet because I have to have somebody meet me at my pain. And so the person I need to meet me at my pain isn't going to do it. So, Pete, I'm picking you, and I'm going to start complaining. And and what I need is I already know the story. I just need to get past the pain to move forward. And I think people sometimes, there's millions of examples, but I know there are times when the venting is just so they can face what they already know they have to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they need a forum in order to do that. And a lot of times we have our minds set on it has to be with that person that we're having the dilemma with. But what you're inviting is it may not be that person. The main thing is that you vent.
Well, let me take my wife, for example. She has a really difficult client right now. She is having a heck of a time. It is the hardest client she's ever had work with. She already knows what she's going to do. She already knows what has to be done, and she knows where it needs to end up. She is venting to me because she cannot go to this client with
that
her
degree
pain.
Of emotion.
She needs to accomplish that with me. And so she vents, and I slip into trying to fix it. And what I get is basically, I already know what's got to happen here. Just will you listen? So that's why she wants to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she can't move forward, and she doesn't need me to fix it. She just needs somebody to serve the part that she can't get from the client.
Because
she can't get that from the client. Can you imagine? Hey, I'm the client. And we really are rotten now that we think about it. Gosh, we're rotten people. You're having a tough time working us because we're just so awful. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, right.
So
no one's going to admit that.
Now, yeah. I was saying, one of the things at the beginning of this podcast that I'd like to send is we're in sort of the negotiation tough customer situation. A lot of what your clients who are starting their ventures and need is there is no negative relationship. There's no relationship at all. And that's why we started sort of with that going out on the limb and networking and meeting people.
Yeah, right. Taking risks to put yourself out there and develop and get curious about the other person.
There's another place I think people should look. And I have found this to be so unbelievably powerful. And it is the power of presenting. Mm-hmm. I don't, if I can avoid it, ever want to go to a networking group where I'm not the speaker. Because what I've found is when I'm the speaker, that networking becomes easy. I've got instant cred.
Yeah.
No one has come up to me and say, hey, I saw your keynote speech. Can you tell me what your qualifications are? They don't ask. And so we started our business by speaking. This is how we built it. We had literally nothing to hang our hat on. Background things, but as far as our business, it hadn't done anything yet.
Yeah.
So what did we do? We started signing up for places to speak on the topic. And people would instantly... I mean, they just assumed if you're speaking on the topic, you must have been doing this for 15 years.
You got to know something if you're
right.
up there.
Yeah. Right. Well, no, actually,
it takes a lot to be there.
And so we didn't necessarily have that much in terms of legs to stand on. But what we could do is we could deliver value and help people with what we knew, and we could show them that we have value. They would assume that we've been around a while, and they would bring us in. And the networking was so different. So a lot of people pass on the opportunity to pursue getting up in front of a group and sharing something. But if you've got a business or a business idea and you're planning, I guarantee your business is helping someone.
Yeah. You have to put yourself in an authority position.
Exactly. Because nobody's in business. Nobody's business is, I would like you to give me money because I would like to spend it. You're going to make a difference for somebody. So that means if you know something that would justify you doing that, that is your topic. You can find an angle to get up and seize the speaking opportunity. And people have stage fright about that. And they're holding back when they don't need to. So I just really, that's a zone I think that is
really
as
good.
Important
yeah.
as meeting new people is positioning yourself as an authority.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and what I'm taking from this conversation, too, is the way that you're talking about the story when you're in a relationship with someone, whether it's personal or whether it's business, that figuring out where you are in the story, that, you know, and
right.
that it is a story.
Yeah, and maybe just a quick tip on that. A lot of people think they need to tell their story or they need to tell their company's story. And really, the trick is you're not telling your story; you're telling your client's story, because it's your clients who have the problem that you solve. You're the hero of your client's story because heroes fix the problems for the main character in a story.
So let me play one of those out. It's super complete and it's very short, and it's our story as Sage Presence. Someone says, wow, what does Sage Presence do? And immediately I think I'm the main character or we're the main character. I need to switch it to the main character is who we help. So someone says, well, Dean, wow, you work at Sage Presence. What do you do? I say, well, business professionals have something like stage fright. They go into their most important moments and they get rattled and they can't communicate as well as they want to. So we bring skills we learned on the movie set that help you structure a powerful message and deliver it powerfully so that you can walk into all those important moments with stage presence. So that I switched the main character. So that the business professionals end up with stage presence. And so the story is stage fright to stage presence for business professionals. That's my story. And I'm not even the main character because I don't want to be the main character. I want to be the hero.
Yeah.
And the hero brings something. So you want to bend your story over to who you help and talk about where you take them. And you're then hero positioning yourself instead of main character positioning yourself.
Okay. Well, I can definitely do that for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for the tip.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, this has been delightful. I really have appreciated both of you being here, your perspectives and your insights and the chemistry has helped us to have a really meaningful conversation.
Mm, well, right back at you.
Okay.
This has been really fun.
Good.
Love
All
it.
Right. Good. Well, thanks for being here. Thanks, Mike Cabea, photographer, editing engineer.
Man of all seasons.
Brother from another mother. I'll see you next Monday.
Do you want to promote your business and grow in your leadership skills? Here are a few ways you can promote your business and get leadership help through We Mentor, Inc. You can be a podcast guest. Challenge yourself to share who you are on air. We'll help you out. Secondly, you can sponsor our podcast program. You can invest a small fee to have you and your company name announced at the beginning and end of one or more shows. The third way that you can promote your business and grow in your leadership skills is you can set up an individual strategy session to do work one-on-one with me, focusing on specific life and leadership issues and skills you want to acquire. Or the fourth way is you can join an entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab. These ELM labs start throughout the year. They are small groups of 5 to 9 business owners who are out to profoundly shift their lives and lead with authenticity. In 2016, I became a registered yoga instructor and mindfulness meditation teacher. I also became certified online with Brené Brown's Brave Leadership and Courage Works courses to learn an effective process of being all in, falling, getting up, and trying again. In turn, I can mentor others in how to dare greatly and rise strong. I feel better equipped to help you forge ahead in these times of great uncertainty. Our Entrepreneurial Leadership and Mentoring Lab process is an integrated approach to leadership development. We do yoga, meditation, and leadership revolution skill setting. Yes, we will help you learn how to strengthen your body, strengthen your mind, and increase your emotional stamina as part of our leadership development process, along with learning about real-world business planning and strategic planning. We do what works. Get involved, get started. You can reach me at 612-804-8920 or go to wementor.com and connect with us. Lastly, if you like our podcast program, help us keep it going. You can donate to our program. Just go to the wementor.com website, click on Buy button, and fill in the donation amount that you would like to contribute. We appreciate any and all contributions. See you next week.